Hello, and thank you for joining us for the RealCom webinar. This is part three of our Smart Building Bootcamp series, and today we will be talking about operational efficiencies and occupant experience. I'm very fortunate to have a great panel with me today, and before we get started, I just want to go over a few housekeeping items. You can use the Q&A section to submit your questions and comments for the panelists, and we will try to get to all the questions throughout the session. If we don't get back to you today, we'll do our best to follow up with you after the event. In case you run into any technical issues, you can email me at sbemperat@realcom.com, and we will also be sending out a copy of the recording. We do recommend that you log out of any other applications that are currently running just to provide the best experience for this webinar. Our gold sponsors today are Igor, Linkspring, and Willow, and we will learn more about these companies throughout the session. And with that, I'd like to introduce you to the moderator for today's event, Tom Shercliffe. Tom is a co-founder and principal at Intelligent Buildings, a company providing cybersecurity services and advisory services that reduce operational risk and lower cost structure in commercial real estate. Tom, thank you so much for joining us, and I will turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Sarah, and welcome back everybody to part three of the bootcamp series. And these bootcamp series have been very successful over the years, not only because of the great panelists and the RealCom platform, but because, as the name would indicate, it's not for smart building experts, but for real estate people that want to know how to get going on a technology strategy and actually start a digital transformation. So this is a safe space from smart building geeks, and any questions are welcome in the question panel. And also we will answer those either live or on emails. We answer them all. So if you have any questions, please submit them. I'm going to do something just a little bit unusual, and I'm actually going to read just a small part of the description that you saw on the promotional material. And it said, intelligent buildings technologies are needed for public health, risk management, operational cost efficiency, and the experiences for occupants. And you know, this summarizes really a convergence of issues in the industry that's been happening before the pandemic, and of course at an increasing pace since then. And so obviously now we added public health to this, to the whole smart buildings conversation. And I submit that we've added an even more intensity going forward around environmental conditions like indoor air quality and water safety. But you'll see today that operational efficiency has been and still is a foundational part of smart buildings, and we'll cover it well. But there's also newly added and inseparable issues like the occupant experience, as the title indicates, which you're going to hear about. So, and we're going to talk about how those are juxtaposed with each other as well. So having said that, I want to go ahead and introduce our first panelist, who is Marlene Farias from Triovest, and she is a Senior Vice President of Property Management and has over 25 years of senior building operations and property management experience. And at Triovest, she's responsible for overseeing the daily operations of approximately 10 million square feet of industrial and commercial real estate in the greater Toronto area. And I think those in the know call that the GTA, right, Marlene?
Yes, they do.
Take it away.
Great, good morning. I wanted to just introduce Triovest. Who is Triovest? For the audience that is in the U.S., Triovest is a third-party property manager. Predominantly, we manage on behalf of pension funds in Canada, in some U.S. as well. We've done, for instance, GM in New York is one of our clients. So we do invest, we buy land, we develop and property manage and asset manage. We are a medium-sized player in the Canadian market. If you just going to give you an idea of who we are, we're about $12 billion in portfolio under management, $2 billion under development right now, predominantly right now in the industrial space. We all are appreciating the need for industrial space. We have over 371 properties across Canada, 503 employees. Yeah, just to give you a geographic area of some of the key cities that we manage and do development in. So I want to talk today from our perspective, from a property management perspective, our roadmap to smart. So I'm going to focus on three areas. Smart strategy. We are in the midst of developing a smart strategy and some tools to really assess and procure. We're going to talk about some of the results, a couple of buildings in a campus that we've added some data intelligence analytics, and we've had some really good results. And then talk about the occupant experience. Like Tom said, there is a push for healthy buildings, so we're testing some technology around that. So our SMART framework, we are trying to enhance our pursuit of operational excellence. We're looking at occupants experience, obviously, asset value enhancement for our clients, for our third party clients. And you know, we wanna minimize risks. We wanna provide an overarching vision that enables Triovest as a team for our skill set, for our knowledge, and to embrace technology. We want to create a consistency approach for technical evaluation and provide a financial return as ROI is at the forefront for our clients. And a national tool to communicate and engage Triovest stakeholders. So just getting a little deeper on to what we're trying to develop. So the technology evaluation and the ROI tool, it's our objective or an overview is to implement a cutting edge technology in our buildings and also look at ROI, evaluate technology through a systematic way, a number of tools that we are creating internally with the help of a company named RICOM. Some of you may know who RICOM is. They're a big player here in Canada. They play in the space. They have been in the space for many years. So our process and innovation, our core building systems now offer feature-reached technology add-ons. For instance, some of the building automation systems, the card access system, they come with analytics. They come with AI technology. We want to look at that. We want to have some consistency in the way that we procure. Our teams have noticed that there's a lot of gaps in how do you procure, how do you look at technology? So we want to have that consistent language across that for them. And so we're designing, and then innovation and procurement approach is really key to us. We have a consistency in evaluating. We want to compare apples to apples when we do bids. How do we know what is the best technology out there? We want more informative decisions in the market and at a management level. We want accurate ROIs and identification of hidden risks for our, again, for us, for the clients. We want to look at data, cybersecurity, networking, who owns that data. That is key for us. In the past, we've had a lot of proprietary systems that have made it very difficult for us to access data. So that's at the forefront of our tool. And we want a better understanding of cost of ownership and risks. We have a roadmap that we want to provide from a net zero perspective. We have reached decarbonization. We want to look at how do we align technology to decarbonize and reach 2030, 2040, 2050, and kind of align with what's happening globally. So some of the results, this campus, the Prologis campus, is on one of the biggest pension funds in Canada. We implemented some data intelligence analytics a few years back. We've had great results. This campus was featured in the IBCON conference a couple of years ago, and we've won a number of awards. They are net zero, and they're very efficient buildings. So just the technology, the building backbone that we've built has given us the ability to implement some really good technology and test some technology as well. So from an occupant experience perspective, we are utilizing data to look at optimizing building air quality. Again, the campus that I discussed has a unique setup in that every heat pump has an air distribution, air handling system. So we're able to monitor the CO2 through sensors and really implement some really good practices as to where we need ventilation. So it makes it very efficient with the ASHRAE standards on putting more fresh air as part of COVID and increasing humidification. We've seen an uptick on energy use, but this technology really gives us the ability to deploy it and deploy air where we need it and really maximize that energy efficiency. And so those are our tested strategies that we're going through and looking at sensors and looking at leveraging that data intelligence platform they have at this building level. And we're also looking at an app, and the app is a tenant experience app. As tenants are starting to reintegrate, or we will be reintegrating in the fall here in Canada, we're looking at that tenant experience. So it's the air quality, sanitization and cleaning is at the forefront. Healthy buildings is at the forefront. We're looking at Fitwell, WELL certification, to enhance that tenant communication and the tenant experience. And again, that technology bringing in the tools that we need to give our tenants so that we can give them that experience. And that's it for me, Tom.
Thank you. And if you don't mind, just a couple of questions, and then we'll get to, of course, more in the larger Q&A panel. But okay, this is boot camp, so I'm going to ask you a boot camp type question. Why did you see the need to create a smart technology strategy? I mean, you know, obviously before you did that, you're still dealing with building control systems and technology. What kind of drove you to really formalize this approach?
So I think it was finding a systematic way of really approaching smart at our buildings, setting a foundation. We really need to have the bricks and mortar so that we can start building from there. As I mentioned before, our industry has always kind of worked in silos. We have a BAS system that is in silos. We have a lighting control system that is in silo. We need to start looking at it more holistically and how do we approach it and add technology to really bring that from an operations optimization as well as a tenant experience component. So we felt a need to really underline what is our approach, what are those tools, and again, an ROI is a big component of that from a value enhancement and a value preservation for our clients.
So did I understand when you talk about the evaluation, the ROI, you developed your own methodology or even tools to evaluate that?
That's right. We do have an internal tool that we look at. It's a systematic way of a number of questions when we're looking at procuring and then looking at contracts as well. When we procure and we enter into a contract, who owns the data? What is cybersecurity, et cetera? So there's a lot of components that goes as part of that tool that we're creating.
Well, that's one of the audience questions that just came in when you're talking is how do you get apples to apples bids? I mean, I think, again, the spirit of the bootcamp, the audience is thinking I've got, you know, building automation system and I've got, you know, digital signage and I've got, you know, lighting control. I got all these things going on. And whether it's MSIs or software or middleware or analytics, how do you get an apples to apples and all of that?
Exactly. It's a systematic approach. So what we did is we created some building profiles. So we have the A class, the B class, C class, and D class. And it's almost like a bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. What are those profiles on those three buildings? And how do I get a bronze building to a platinum level? And so you need to create a roadmap. And so there's a systematic way of approaching it from a number of questions on technology. What are we looking at? And again, it's the hardware, it's the objective for that building, and really is a contractual part as well that needs to be all kind of tied in together.
And that kind of, the audience question and your answer kind of speaks to the why you needed to have a smart building strategy and even a tool, because there are all those aspects of it, right?
Exactly.
And you mentioned a couple of times the ROI, and again, kind of an obvious question, well, maybe not so obvious. Is ROI always the measure, or do you also consider risk or sort of brand expectations and experience that aren't maybe classic return on investment measurable?
Yeah, and they all are factors. So we created six different pillars, and those pillars are resilience, risk, telco, we have infrastructure, we have data, and then we have smart. So those are the six pillars that we analyze under. And that's part of our ROI strategy, but it's not always about ROI. If we feel that we need to, reposition an asset, redevelop an asset to a different class, then ROI may not be the driver. We meet, there's other aspirations from a client perspective, and again, from a long-term value perspective that you need to kind of analyze. So not all the time, but we do, our business is driven by ROI.
I think that's an important perspective, because what we try to communicate is that whether you have a smart building strategy or not, you either have or you're getting a bunch of technology in your building. That's just the way BAS and elevators and everything works. So it's not a question of whether you can get high tech. It's a question of whether or not you can be smart and coordinated in that way. Exactly. One last question, and then I know we need to move on. But you said several times about the data, which is, of course, a phrase of the day, right? Yeah. When you talk about data ownership, more about TrioVest or the owner or the occupant? I mean, where does the data ownership generally, are you trying to point it to, or is it just away from the contractor and then your stakeholders decide? Where's the destination for that ownership?
So from an operations perspective, the building data, we want to have good data so we can make some smart decisions. You can ask a contractor for data. They may give you just raw data, or sometimes they charge you for data. There was an incident in one of the buildings that we're asking for some of the data, and the contractor wanted $40,000 to give us data. And it was raw data, which wasn't really analytic data. So we need some good data so that we can make some smart decisions. So, moving away from kind of that old fashioned way of having data. I mean, there's data everywhere in the building, but what type of data we're getting, and again, making those contracts really tight with the type of data that we are supposed to be given, and who owns the data. We want to own the data because we want to make the smart decisions with that data.
No, that's good. And just to wrap up, this has been really helpful, I think, for the audience. And maybe a question, a statement and a question at the same time. The way we've just had this conversation almost sounds like a reasonable sequence for somebody just getting started. Have a strategy, develop some tools, be able to evaluate apples to apples, then consider data ownership. Was that sort of not a bad sequence of how to think this through?
Yeah, it's absolutely the sequence, and there's a component of education as well. A lot of our operation staff are either aging, or we're bringing new people in, but perhaps are not savvy from a technology perspective. So the strategy also looks at education and really giving the tools that our operators need for managing smart buildings, but also our property management group that really kind of needs to understand what is coming down the pipe from a technology perspective.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you again. That was really a great start. And if you'll hang around for the panel conversation questions in the end, we appreciate it. Thank you, Marlene.
Thank you.
Yep, we're gonna go to a quick video before we introduce our next panelist. All right. So with that, I'll introduce our next panelist, Thomas Kaufman, who is a senior director of corporate real estate at United Therapeutics, and he is responsible for managing the entitlement, design, and construction of the company's new headquarters, the largest commercial site net zero building on the East Coast. And Thomas, I fancy myself as a smart building consultant, and saw about everything possible in that video, and I can humbly say I've never consulted on a labyrinth. So I will talk to you about that offline.
Yeah, definitely.
Look forward to hearing about that.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. The video, I think, does a great job of a quick 2-minute overview of the building, and does something that would take me hours to do. So as Tom mentioned, I work for a company called United Therapeutics. We're a biotech company. Long-term mission is to manufacture personalized lungs. So very technology-oriented, very mission-driven, very focused on pushing the envelope of what's possible. And the mandate that we got for our new headquarters, which I'm actually in right now, it's a completed building, was for it to be site net zero. So on an annual basis, we offset 100% of the energy that we consume with renewable energy generated on site. And that was the mandate from day one. We didn't really set out to build a smart building, but we quickly understood that in order to achieve that net zero mission, we were going to need to build a smart building. And one of the key takeaways that I think applies for anyone that's really interested in smart buildings is just how central controls are to the successful operation and understanding of the performance of a net zero building. And we recognized very early on that controls was going to be, you know, everything. The mission was going to live and die by controls. And we ended up totally changing the approach by which we procured our controls subcontractor. It was actually the first subcontractor that we brought on board was our controls contractor. We were trying to avoid the typical situation that I've experienced on big construction projects, where the control subcontractor is really operates in a black box and no one has any visibility into what's happening. And we'd be a few weeks away from substantial completion, and there would be some person sitting on a bucket with a laptop in a closet, and no one had any idea what was going on. So we really tried to completely change that approach by early procurement, early engagement. We had a very systematic approach to systems integration. We had biweekly meetings starting from really from the buyout process, even before we mobilized for construction, where we sat down with the general contractor, control subcontractor, our IT group, our maintenance engineering, key subcontractors, and mapped out in a methodical way exactly which systems we were going to integrate them and how we were going to do it. And I think had we not taken that approach, it would have been a really maybe a disaster, but at least a very we would have been challenged to operate the building effectively and also understand and have visibility into the data to validate that we truly were achieving this mission. Oops, I just closed. Sorry about that. Sorry, there's a little delay. Oops. Ian, I'm having trouble advancing the slides. Thank you. So we thought strategically about which building systems we wanted to integrate. And we realized very quickly that we weren't trying to pursue integration for integration's sake. There are certain things, certain systems that from a practical standpoint really don't need to be integrated and in our experience shouldn't be integrated. And so things like access control, audio, visual, fire alarm, we kept those out of the equation. We were really focused on using building technology to achieve this net zero mission. And we saw systems integration as an ability to get complete visibility into the data of the building and to use that data to educate occupants about how the building worked and to help them think about how their behavior could have an impact on the performance of the building, which is a really different approach for us. The biotech world is very competitive when it comes to talent. And so we really try to treat our employees well. And our buildings are typically really used to kind of facilitate whatever anyone needs to be happy and productive. And so this was kind of a different approach where we were asking our employees to think about the mission of the building. And so having visibility into data and the ability to use that data for educational and inspirational purposes was something that we thought a lot about and put a lot of effort into. Next slide, if I don't have control. Seems like I don't. Okay. And this is just a quick example of some of the data visualizations that we're using. Oops, go back one slide. Some of the data visualizations that we're using from an operational standpoint that our kind of internal operations team is using both to operate the building and to understand the extent to which we are actually achieving our net zero mission. This next visual is, next slide, Ian. This next visual is an example of how we're taking that data and going beyond the kind of operational considerations, but using it to create these interesting interactive experiences for our employees where they can get a feel for what's happening behind the scenes, understand how the building is working, but not do it in a way that is overly pedantic and distracting. At the end of the day, our employees have an important mission of creating life-saving therapies, and you know that's no small feat. But the last thing we wanted was to distract people with the sustainability mission of the building. But we tried to find this balance where people had an opportunity to just at a very high level get a quick visual and understand the energy performance of the building, but then have the opportunity to do a deeper dive. And so this interactive display is an example where if I'm giving a tour of the building, for example, maybe a new employee, a potential partner, or some kind of community group or industry group, I'll stop here and there's just a ton of data around historical performance, real-time performance, how some of the different systems work. So you have the opportunity to both do a deep dive or just kind of pass by it throughout the course of your daily activities and get a little view into how the building is performing. We, of course, we're thinking about the extent to which employee behavior, occupant behavior impacts the performance of a net zero building. And our initial thinking was that that was an absolutely critical component of the performance of this building. One of the things that we learned was because we focused so much on systems efficiency, building efficiency, the occupant behavior actually has less of an impact because we had the most efficient lighting systems, the most efficient HVAC systems, the ability to naturally ventilate the building whenever possible. The occupant behavior actually has less of an impact. On the topic of wellness and the things that we're all becoming much more aware of these days, we again didn't intend to really address wellness at all. But one of the interesting happy coincidences of our mechanical strategy and our systems integration strategy, the ability to naturally ventilate the building, bringing fresh air into the building whenever outside conditions allow for it, obviously has a huge benefit from a wellness standpoint. So, this is a really, what we were trying to do was show what was possible and make a statement about obviously who United Therapeutics is as an organization, but also inspire others to push the envelope of sustainability. And I have the luxury of not having to rely on operating income from my buildings. Our buildings are providing facilities for our scientists to do research, for the various employees to do whatever is critical for business success. And we're in a very high margin business, and I don't have to worry about generating revenue from the building. I generate revenue indirectly. We use these buildings to make statements about who United Therapeutics is. We use the buildings to facilitate a unique culture, and that's ultimately used to attract and retain talent. And so the premium that we pay for a net zero building like this, pennies on the dollar if you zoom out and think about the extent to which that will bring in those super talented people that will ultimately develop a multi-billion dollar cash flow. So it's a very different perspective and a very different business model than a typical real estate developer. And it gives us the luxury of being able to really push the envelope and have fun with technology, which is a pretty cool situation to be in. So that's just kind of a taste of our experience with smart buildings. And look forward to answering any questions that anyone has.
That was fantastic. Thank you. So yeah, definitely a couple of questions. And just for obvious comparison, you know, Marlene is in the commercial real estate business, and it was really appropriate, Thomas, that you say you're really in corporate real estate with a different, not in the business of real estate. So I would ask though that, you know, net zero, it's a lift, right? And so how does it align with your business model? Is it really the attraction and retention? Is there something deeper in your actual business model?
I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's all about talent in this industry. And we really see our real estate as a means to kind of present our culture, kind of physical manifestations of our culture. And it's all about getting those, you know, PhD, MD, MBAs. Sometimes that's all one person. So you can imagine those people have options. You know, they can go. There's a lot of places that want them. Without those super smart people, you know, these extremely ambitious goals that our organization has will never be achieved. So it really, it's from a business standpoint, it is purely about talent. You know, part of our culture and part of getting the smart people is having a culture that, you know, values things like sustainability and trying to minimize our impact on the environment. So I think to answer your question, it really hinges around talent, but it's also kind of part of the culture of the company and trying to do the right thing.
I think that's a really important point because, you know, historically in the smart building conversation, I mean, years ago, it was just almost always, it was always about energy and operational expense and not always thinking about what is the building's purpose beyond that. And I know a lot of us have heard of this almost cliche, but just for the boot campers, I'll say there's this 330-300 thing where they said, you know, $3 a square foot is roughly your utilities, $30 a square foot is roughly your rent, but $300 a square foot is your people. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget being in a meeting in New York City with a financial services company where they said, hell with that. I'm worried about the 3,000 a square feet, which is what they make. And you also alluded to that.
Exactly. So, yeah.
It was not the utilities and the rent that you or this gentleman that talked to me. It was really the people and the revenue that was the purpose for that. So it's really, really interesting perspective. What about future buildings? Like this was like, must've been like birthing a baby for you. And now did they say good job and you're done? Or do they say, now that was so good, do it again?
That's exactly how I think of it. This was my baby. 8 years of my life were just like totally focused on this project. The company continues to grow, and it really depends on the kind of facility that we're building. When we are building a manufacturing facility, for example, it's a really energy intensive building because of all the FDA regulations around, you know, the environmental conditions that need to be maintained to safely produce a product that goes into a human being. Those buildings, they can't be site net zero. It's you know, unless someone has a new innovation on the renewable side, it's not really possible. But for all of our administrative buildings, we start out with an objective of trying to be site net zero. It's not always physically possible given site constraints, but we start with that goal.
Wow. And then this is related a little bit. You said spent 8 years of your life, and it was amazing. Even just like you said, the short video showed all the things that were occurring, and people in traditional design, development, and property management, you know, watch that video and, you know, imagine how that goes. So it's really a boot camp question here. I mean, can mere mortals do this?
I mean, I think so. I think it's not, and you know, it's not about necessarily building a net zero building, but I think the takeaway that anyone can get from this is putting energy performance as a central metric in your project execution plan. And that was how we got here. I mean, every single decision from the beginning was framed within the context of what does this do to us from an energy performance standpoint? And that same thinking can be applied even without taking it to the extreme of, you know, what we did, which as I mentioned, is not always physically possible.
Yeah, and one more question, and I'm sure Sarah's kicking me under the electronic table, but I was like hot on what you just said. Just a moment more about, you know, net zero is obviously super high performance. which it does attract people, but you still got to have an occupant experience. You've got to have productivity in the building, and you mentioned fresh air and all this. I mean, are those competing? Do you find that you're focused on the occupant experience and then you're sort of losing a little bit on the net zero side? How do you balance that?
It's a great question. I don't think they are in direct head-to-head competition, but sometimes you have to make trade-off decisions. You know, I think we could probably talk for hours about some of those trade-offs. But I think there's, with a little bit of strategic thinking, you can align both of those objectives.
Yeah, I think that's probably a conversation, and we're going to have that throughout the session today, because that was in the title, and I think it's a little bit of an overdue conversation. So we're going to come back around to that, because we, you know, occupant experience, attraction, retention really was a huge phase really of smart buildings just before the pandemic, and now even the pandemic says more fresh air means energy. So we'll come back to that for sure. And thank you for a fantastic presentation there.
My pleasure.
Yep. I think we're going to have one short video here, and I'll introduce the next speaker.
LinkSpring's Edge to Enterprise for Enterprise and Multi-Sites is a turnkey smart building solution that connects, accesses, and translates operational and facility data from devices and equipment into actionable information. Information that can save energy, increase efficiency, and reduce operating costs while maintaining a higher level of comfort for occupants. The Edge to Enterprise solution consists of hardware and software combined with engineering, deployment, and professional services. It's everything you need to deploy and experience the value of a smart facility enterprise, including connectivity, integration, interoperability, automation, command and control, data access and normalization, analytics, and cloud services.
Okay. Super. And now I'd like to introduce Mark Pitok. He is with LinkSpring, and he's the Chief Marketing and Communications Officer, and he is a pioneer in leading the intelligent smart buildings and M2M and IoT movements and pushing them forward. He currently leads LinkSpring's corporate and product marketing strategy, brand management, and communications, and is a longtime friend of RealCom. And real pleasure, Mark. Take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Shurcliffe. You notice I said Mr. So delighted to be here with everybody today. Thank you. Appreciate it. So let's get started. So no matter how well designed or constructed, buildings need to be carefully operated and maintained to sustain performance and efficiency. Day-to-day operations impact occupant experience, the efficient use of resources such as energy, water, materials, and all the associated cost related. Research tells us that nearly 5 to 6 times the construction cost of a building is spent as operational cost during its lifetime. Also, building operating costs can make up 1/3 of an organizational's overhead. So we must look at ways to operate buildings and facilities for comfort, efficiency, but also to optimize facilities for what I refer to as total operation performance. That includes that occupant wellness, which we've been touching about on a little bit earlier here, productivity, streamline operations, lower OPEX, corporate social responsibility. And Tom, you mentioned this, which I think is a new area that all of us need to be concerned with, is reduced risk or risk mitigation. So today I'm going to share with you a few key areas that I think is important to keep in mind. So let's start with what I refer to as guiding principles. It also kind of mirrors what Marlene said as far as how do you think this thing through. So if you look at this, I've outlined, start with a strategy. That's key and foremost. If you don't have a strategy, I think unfortunately you will not be successful. And then further within these guiding principles, take a look at discovering what you have. Create a framework, and I'm going to touch on that a little bit here. I'll elaborate here in a few moments. A financial baseline, data, identification, how you're going to use it, where you're going to use it, who's going to use it, who's going to own it. Key point there. KPIs, system integration and automation, the technology that you might want to use, prioritize and funding. How is this going to be paid for? Monitor, measuring the metrics, reporting and results. And just as equally important at the tail end here is that continuous improvement. So let me, as I said, let me elaborate a little bit on what I refer to as the framework. At the center of delivering true operational performance and efficiency is creating this centralized, this base framework. It's an operational performance framework that can be looked at in a way in which the building systems and all the equipment and the devices are being used and utilized as intended, and that the facility or facilities are achieving efficiencies and continually finding savings throughout its entire operations. The framework provides an environment that drives occupant wellness, productivity, and satisfaction. And key here, supports the changing dynamics of that workplace. It enables a shift from a reactive one to a predictive one and reduces the unwanted forced downtimes. Continuing on my discussion today, let me share with you some KPIs, what I mean by KPIs, which I think we all have our own definition. There, within the built environment, there are definitely some common KPIs that you'll find that most operation teams care about, but they will also have others that are based on their own specific strategic initiatives. There are typically five categories to consider when identifying KPIs, and I've lumped them here. Financial, and this measures the financial health, the revenue profit growth, and performance to the goals. Operational KPIs that measure the performance of the process, the quality, vendor SLAs, efficiency factors, and so forth and so on. Value add KPIs are KPIs that measure whether approved processes and technology enhancements, as well as cost reduction items, have been implemented well and are performing as intended. Strategic KPIs indicates the success of the strategic business outcome initiatives, that this whole effort that you're trying to do produces the key business outcomes. These KPIs determine whether all facets of the property or the portfolio are aligned with the overall business objectives that you have set forth. And finally, occupant satisfaction. And again, we've talked a little bit about that today so far, and we'll talk about it more. Are the occupants, whether tenant or corporate owned, are they happy with their space? Is the technology that's being provided by the facilities team up to speed? Is the communication level between the facility side and the occupants up to where they're supposed to be? And how it's being, you're responding to complaints. So next is metrics. And I've identified several here that I think definitely provide a good base, especially from the bootcamp perspective, is building running cost. How much is your building costing you? The reliability of the building and the resilience to failure. The flexibility of the internal space, because again, we're always constantly moving and adapting, especially in the world we live in today. The building systems complexity, the productivity of the occupants, the contribution to the company's corporate image, and today, with respect to ESG, the environmental impact. So in summary, to summarize all of this is, it's operational efficiency makes its presence felt within our buildings and workplace. Not only is it part of our digital transformation on how we manage and operate our facilities, it's also really changing the way we work and we interact with our buildings and facilities. It, as I see it, it's presenting new opportunities for creating, operating, and servicing. And quite honestly, it's no longer just about comfort and efficiency anymore. While important, it's that total operational value, increasing the ROI of the systems you have, not only on a daily basis, but over the entire lifespan of that facility. And most importantly, Tom, you touched on it, is that whole addressing risk and risk mitigation. So with that, Tom, turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Mark. Couple questions. You did a great job listing some of the KPI categories, but do you have any examples of what the actual KPI specifics for some of your customers maybe? Just did they say, I've got to get to X in one of these categories, or is it not quite that specific?
Well, I think each is going to be different, but I mean, especially today, given the environment and, you know, coming what we're doing, air quality, CO2, anything COVID related is critical. Because again, part of that is being brought in to creating that trust value, that trust factor, when we're coming into our buildings, that you can be assured that we've taken all the initiatives to make it a COVID-friendly type environment or whatever. Also, air supply and ventilation kind of goes into that, if you will. But schedule, set points, alarms, and things like that. And finally, you know, the equipment life cycle and being able to extend the lifetime value of the equipment that's running in those buildings. So those are just prime general examples.
So you're saying that the customer really is the one that determines what they're focused on. They focus on more of a sort of a healthy environment. I need more outside air. Help me if you got to do that, or I've got to reduce my operating cost, or they tend to have different hotspots or priorities.
Well, I don't want to say they're different. I think it's a combination of a lot of what you just brought together. And again, that comes out in developing a strategy, developing discovery. And again, those are the types of questions that you need, or objectives, outcomes that need to be identified right at the very beginning. Then how do you implement it? When are you going to implement it? And so forth and so on.
Yep, really, actually really good point. Okay, well, thank you for those questions, answers. I'm going to jump along and we'll circle back during the Q&A. Thanks, Mark.
Sounds good, thanks.
Again, we're going to have a video introduction, then I'll introduce the panelists.
My name is Dwight Stewart. I'm the founder of Egor. Egor is helping make buildings smart, and it simplifies that process. What we do is we make a unified platform, so that really reduces the cost, so you don't have to have that end-to-end for each one. And now you start getting some extra benefits where you can see a sensor from one thing can be applied to take action somewhere else. We make it really simple. It's a single cable that is able to send power as well as data communication, and it can be installed by just about anyone. Egor is in 27 different countries, and we have been fortunate to be growing at 300% a year.
All right. Next is Dwight Stewart of Egor, he's the founder and CTO with over 20 years of technology entrepreneurship experience. Dwight is a proven innovator in the clean tech and smart building industry. He's currently founder and CTO of Egor, and a POE intelligent building software company. And if there's one thing I like to see, Dwight, it's that single cable doing it all.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, I need to go back one slide here. Not sure if I can do that or not. I don't know if that someone can do that for me. Oh, there we go. All right. So appreciate the time with everyone here today, and I just want to talk about what we're doing and how we're utilizing different technologies such as power over Ethernet to really create that unified building experience. And, you know, to step back a little bit, you know, it's interesting to think that even after decades, you know, I've been doing this, as you said, you know, for 20 years, but controls and buildings and intelligence and data have been talked about for long before that. And only 5% of buildings have controls. And if you think about any adoption cycle, that's pretty pathetic. It's really intelligent buildings require too much investment. It's heavy upfront costs for the custom design build process, the materials, the labor. You know, everything has end-to-end silos, the wiring, and then the operating expenses. There's ongoing system maintenance across all your individual systems and having to maintain each one individually, and also modifying systems are very expensive. So really what we see is the solution is to decompose traditional system silos and share one infrastructure for distributing DC power, data, and security. And by doing that, you can consolidate it onto one, what we call an agile unified platform. So Power over Ethernet is one of those enablers that make that possible. We see Power over Ethernet, or PoE, as the backbone for power, data, and cybersecurity. And then Igor uses PoE nodes, which, you know, here's an example of. And these nodes, you can just connect whatever you want to these, any non-IP device that's not yet on the network. So sensors, lights, actuators, but you also free yourself from proprietary choices. So imagine USB connectors every 10 feet for connecting any device now or in the future. So you can easily add or remove on day two after the install as you have new things that you want to employ. And then it uses IT standards to allow for a large labor pool of standard IT professionals to service the installs. And then an added benefit is that it acts as a DC microgrid for sustainable business objectives. So there's lots of different ways to generate electricity, solar panels and so forth, but the distribution within a building of DC power and creating that micro or nano grid approach is still something that you know, we're able to address and really hasn't been a standard yet. Next slide is really thinking about the connected space. So once you have all this on the software, it creates a lot of opportunities. But right now, traditional building processes, it's just too expensive to achieve outcomes. And it requires custom systems integrations, it requires custom automations and maintenance, and traditionally only focusing on building operations and cost reduction. So what we see as the solution here is to focus on business enablement to generate value, attracting and retaining a talented team and brand equity, and then, you know, focusing on a single infrastructure platform that is open and secure. Plug and play connectivity of applications and apps and other platforms, just making it simple. And then that acts as a foundation for numerous use cases. So whether it's safety, security, health, occupant conveniences and marketing, whatever it might be. And then creating those as turnkey kits solutions. So it, having all of the different parts and pieces and the apps with that platform so that it just can be bundled as a turnkey kit for an open office or a conference room or corridor or more. So the slides have been kind of jumping around here. I apologize for that. I'm gonna go to the next slide, which is about office. So traditionally, there's just not enough value to justify the cost. And if you've been in the industry long enough, you find that even with a great design at the end of the day, that you just end up with meeting the minimal building codes. All the good stuff gets value engineered out of your building design, and you just have a shelter, you know, basically at the end of the day. And it's very frustrating. So what we see as the solution is to create a bundled turnkey plug and play kit by using the platform that makes that a simple process, basically transforming things into a Lego kit, as I described. That makes it so that you have a clear outcome, as well as you can use and assemble a multi-brand set of hardware and software that all comes together and can be quick to deploy and much less expensive because it's already been determined as how that process works. And then if we go on to the conference room, you know, same problems, but also, you know, typically building controls is more of a generic approach. And the opportunity though is context is everything. You know, if you use a software-driven approach for delivering experiences for specific space types and the people in them and the time of day and so forth, so you can get a whole lot of other benefits such as listed here with You know, being able to integrate it to your AV system and create a more, you know, simplified, streamlined experience that people would expect from a conference room. And then moving on to the workspace, you know, just talking about one of the aspects of workspace is sustainability. And as I mentioned before, Igor delivers a DC microgrid distribution system using PoE and even USB. And these are open standards, which you can easily pair with sustainable power generation of the future. And then software add-ons enable energy optimization, space optimization, productivity enhancements. Basically, you're future-proofing your building for these sustainable digital outcomes. And in conclusion, really, as I mentioned, you know, buildings are just a shelter right now. And if that's the case, people are just going to work from home. So how do we address that? What, you know, really need to use a software platform approach so you can do more. And our goal as Igor is to overwhelm you with business value, to make your buildings productive assets that generate business value, not just act as a shelter. Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. Really helpful. And although the boot camp referee threw a flag early on with a phrase DC microgrid, and it's a really important one, but I wonder if you could just back up and explain that a little bit, because I think there's something important and doable in there if we define it.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of conversation right now about re-electrification and moving things from the traditional AC line voltage. And, you know, and with that technology, it requires certain labor classes, and that is relatively expensive for labor and materials. Moving things to a DC grid allows for a low voltage implementation, which can be employed by IT professionals in this case, but also there's less conversions. Let's say if you have a DC supply generation system with photovoltaics, then you don't have to convert from DC, which those generate, to AC power. You can just keep it DC the whole time, and it maintains higher efficiencies.
Yeah, so this is fantastic. And Dwight, I'm glad you've talked about these things, because we've said before in another session that, you know, power over Ethernet sometimes comes across as a just a techie conversation and sort of a networking thing. But what you're saying is, if I heard you right, so many things, and I want you to cover a little laundry list here in a second, in an office environment are powered by DC, which you know, usually we get from an AC outlet to power the DC thing, right? And now you're adding the sustainability element. So if I'm getting solar PV or something like that in DC, without your thought process, we're converting it back to AC, then back to DC again.
Yeah, it's a lot of waste and, you know, complexity that isn't required. And if you look at the lifespan of certain devices, the electrical components required to go from AC to DC actually is one of the main reasons why devices fail. There's a capacitor that's typically in there that fails. So you're actually going to get better lifespan by keeping things all DC as well.
So, yeah, and I'm not trying to be too technical, because I'm not, but even without the solar versus PV, if I convert it once in the infrastructure in a power over Ethernet switch, now I can really just continue to power all these DC things directly from DC, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you mind just laundry list some of the things for folks to understand that are powered by DC? Obviously lights, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you look even at your own home, if you just look around, it's almost everything has an adapter nowadays. So it's basically everything except for, let's say, heavy appliances such as, you know, wash machine, or, you know, in a office, you're still going to have to, in some cases, have people walk around with vacuum cleaners that they need to plug in. But even those things are turning into battery operated devices. So you're really, I mean, lights, LEDs, very low voltage, low wattage devices that are DC now. So
We can also say telephones, access control, video surveillance, even the emergency exit signs. I mean, just all around you, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's again, really, really fantastic on the power of Ethernet, and the DC microgrid is not some Star Wars thing. It's just the infrastructure that supplies all these DC things in your space, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, it really is a It's a consolidated way of delivering power that can be highly managed and applicable to just about everything.
And then the last question, and we'll come back around in the questions, is that what you also advocate is a platform to manage all of those things, because you do have the electricity and the intelligence, and then those things can be coordinated and programmed.
Absolutely, yeah. So really think about it. If done correctly, a platform really keeps things simple and convenient. And you know, before the smartphone, people would have to have a phone, a laptop, a camera, a map, you know, all these different things that they take with them, which really means that they didn't take them with them because it's just too complicated. It took too much space. So all they took were their phone. So now with a consolidated platform approach, it really lowers the cost and enables many more possibilities. Really think about it too, is from a cybersecurity standpoint, manageability standpoint, that you don't have to play whack-a-mole on every little thing, but rather you can just focus on one platform that you harden, and then you're going to have, you know, much more protection from things like ransomware, which is obviously getting a lot of notice right now.
Yep, for sure. Well, great. Well, thank you, Dwight. That was really helpful. We're going to jump into an introduction video, and then I'll bring up the next panelist. Thanks again.
A digital twin is a virtual replica of a physical asset. It collects and organizes big data from devices, equipment, people, and places to derive insights that optimize asset performance and user experience. The technology was first applied by NASA and has found value in other industries: manufacturing, health, automotive. Willow is redefining the digital twin for the built world. Our mission is to be the leader in this exciting new category by creating the ecosystem for smart buildings and infrastructure. With our partners from across the globe, together, we are building a connected, sustainable, and innovative future. Willow.
Okay, great. Next is Adam Glaud, and he is the Vice President of Project Development for Willow, a global technology company bringing digital twins to the built world. He has 13 years of experience in commercial building and infrastructure, focusing on portfolio-based digital transformation and enterprise-level energy conservation initiatives. And Adam, what people really want to know in the boot camp is three words. What is it?
What is it? It's a good starting point. So I think what I want everyone to sort of understand in the digital twin space is that the digital twin is actually a very precise virtual replica of a building, but not just the building, but all the things that actually occur within that building. So if I want to think about how a digital twin is going to come together, we're actually going to start with all sorts of different pieces of data. So ultimately, what we like to go with is spatial data, right? We think about a digital twin oftentimes as the BIM coming off of design and construction. So we take 2D drawings and 3D models and add, you know, GIS maps and all sorts of things like that. But then we'll bring in the static data that comes from construction, what all the different inputs are from the different trades that come on board, equipment metadata, O&M manuals, warranties, things of that nature. So now we have a really good solid starting place. But where the digital twin becomes a digital twin is when we start to talk about live data. So now we turn it all on, and we're going to add system and device data in a way that's going to let people see how the BMS and the elevators and the energy and access control systems are actually taking, how they're moving through that spatial system. So that's a really good starting place for what a digital platform might be and what a digital twin is. But oftentimes, there's more to that story, and I think it's really what this boot camp is about today, because we want to bring in all the external data that really affects the people inside of the building. So we take weather and traffic and how people are getting into the building, but then the real secret sauce comes when you start to get into the business data. So let's talk about who's using what parts of which spaces, why are people coming into the spaces, and then how can they grow with that. So once you provide a platform, and that's what a digital twin ultimately is really this It's a data aggregation layer that allows for sort of the movement through that data to the appropriate places. We're going to go in, drive intelligence to all the different point solutions that come on board to add to that spatial static and live data, all right? So if you want to plug in an access control system or an energy efficiency platform, those are all individual point solutions that are really good at solving their individual problem. Now we want to go down this path of saying, all right, how does all that actually compare to those other solutions, adding the intelligence to drive all the business cases you see here on the right. So maybe you have business cases that are really specific to design and construction or handover. Maybe you have some really specific smart operation strategies where you want to talk about sustainability or occupant experience. Each one of these is going to have a different set of outcomes, and we're going to use that with what's actually inside of the intelligence or comes from the intelligence inside of a data platform like a TWN. So I can move forward here. What we're going to try to actually address inside of all this spatial and static data as it's moving around. Let me see, it's not advancing for me. Would you mind moving it on for me, Ian? I'm sorry, excellent. Because I wanted everyone to see this example. It's a real example. It's a real building. It's actually looking at all of the devices and solutions that are plugged into a particular building. Now, this is a smart building. This is what people are talking about developing, because they're going out and adding access control system, people counting, and all sorts of different, you know, security and safety and transportation tools into this building. And I'm not necessarily advocating for any one of these systems, but they're systems that we plugged into that we're then bringing into the TWN in one single place and then applying a certain amount of logic to it that allows it to be pushed out to the other systems on the right here. So again, this is what's interesting to, I think, the people in this particular boot camp, because we're taking all this operational information on the left side of the screen, and then we're using that to impact all of the experience information on the right side of the screen. So it really becomes interesting when you start talking about building access and room booking and things as it applies to, you know, ERP systems and making plans for the future, or talking about how someone would even deal with things like Microsoft 365 and what's happening in the way someone's organizing their day and what rooms they're reserving. All of that comes out in this particular case to a couple of very specific tenants and tenant experience within that building. These tenants wanted this data from the building level so they could actually drive their own tenant experience here on the bottom right. So what you see in this wheel is really the opportunity to take operational data and really construction data and drive it into the experience side. So if we think about from a very, very simple level, you know, Dwight went into a fairly advanced concept about how we would impact things with POE lighting. And this is just a generic lighting sort of concept that could be used for anything from access control to anything else that you might have in your building. But what will happen first is, you know, we have a wall switch in the room that I'm in right now that says someone's in this room, we're going to turn the lights on. Once those lights go on, we can send that information to a platform like the TWN to say, hey, there's someone in that room. We need you now to notify another system. And in this case, we're going to notify the BMS. Cool that room to the appropriate 72 degree set point we want for an occupied space. So again, a really basic example of, you know, this it impacts something else, but then it goes the other way too. Okay, hey, person's out of the room, bring that temperature back up. Don't worry about bringing it down to 72 unless someone books this room or someone does something else that makes this room a necessary room for a participant. This helps lead to sort of the energy efficiency concepts. It helps to lead to certainly health and wellness, because if you're going to bring 9 people into a small conference room, you might want to look at increasing outside air. That's obviously one of the big factors everyone's trying to drive through today. So we want to make sure the tenant gets that experience as well. And really talk about greater comfort being the thing that's making people come into the office during a return to work strategy. You can get out of right at the top of the scale here. Everyone can jump into the full digital building, really intelligent building. But the reality is most buildings exist in this lower quadrant here in the bottom left, because everything is just sort of ad hoc data. But what we're trying to do is help people bring on technology platforms that are going to really drive some problem solving. I have this problem. I need a solution that's going to do this for me. Once you centralize and normalize all the data coming out of those technology tools, you can actually move to a more strategic approach of then, you know, driving revenue and generating value through, you know, dashboarding of these particular actions, taking specific action on the intelligence that comes off of those tools, and eventually move your way all the way up to a very, you know, quantitative, you know, business 4.0 type strategy of how you're going to run your business. So lastly, I want to move to one more component of, you know, what a dashboard sort of looks like within TWN. You can bring in information that might be operationally specific and have a different dashboard for someone else that can look at the same bits of information coming off all those tools to then drive an occupant experience. So I'm actually sitting in a customer's office right now, and it's great. You don't get to do this too much anymore. So this is a really great return to work sort of story, because what we're doing here today is actually talking about a strategy where we can actually overlay occupancy data with HR data and access control. So if someone comes into the building and Adam comes in every, you know, Monday at 9 a.m. and Tom comes into the building every Monday at 9 a.m. and this happens every Monday from here, you know, on out, there's some relevance to say, hey, perhaps Adam and Tom want to talk to each other for a reason. We see that by connecting this with, you know, with Outlook, that there is a real relevance between the communications of Tom and Adam. Or with HR, we see that they're in the same org structure, or vice versa. I might say, hey, Tom, you always come in on Tuesdays. Adam, you always come in on Mondays. Maybe you guys should consider coming in on the same day and actually set up an occupant experience that's relevant to the way the buildings run, and actually set aside the proper amount of desks or seats within that space to run the business. So this kind of gives you an idea of how occupancy or not, but operations affects the user experience. And I was kind of saying that if we bring all these things together in a place that people can see it and read it without having to go to each one of those tools individually, they end up with a better experience, and we end up with a more of that placemaking mindset. So that's sort of my story on how the Willow Digital Twin gets you there. And Tom, let me have your questions.
That was pretty good on what it is, or what is it. So thanks. And so really playing off that, a couple things. I mean, obviously, and I like the way you started with, you know, data, you know, it's data, and it can do so many different things. Do you find that, because, you know, nobody goes from 0 to 100 miles an hour in one step, right? So do people tend to start at different places? Some maybe with marketing for a 3D model, some maybe with more traditional analytics, some with an operational dashboard, some about occupancy. Do you find the entry points are different?
The entry point is always different, right? Everyone, it's like, how did you get to where we are today? Everyone came from a different spot just to get to this meeting. And that's really the way even the building process is going. Oftentimes, you'll see a very quick uptake in the construction process. People want to have a digital ready building when they're going to build a very, very expensive new building. It makes good sense. But really, that's not very many buildings overall. Most buildings are already there. And what we're trying to do is help people understand their individual journey to get to the more digitized building. So those are the ones that really have the disparate systems that need to be organized. So usually someone will start talking about construction, but then actually implement what's generally a very light touch sort of data management layer on their other assets, so that they can see things from an asset level, or from an asset management level, from a C-suite level or director level at everything that's going on. And then once that's in place, they'll start to drill down an individual building to make that really deep fidelity information where they can see it all and predict the future.
So you may have said this, but would you say that people tend to say, gee, this is the way it's going to be, now let me find a way to get started? Or do they say, I have this problem, and gee, it can do more later? I mean, do they start with a micro viewpoint or a macro viewpoint typically?
Yeah, it always starts with a micro. But generally, what happens is it very quickly builds, right? So you know, no one's going to show up and say, everything is perfect in my world today, so I'm just going to change it all tomorrow. So everyone shows up and says, hey, I have to resolve this individual problem. Usually what occurs is the solution to that problem is not a single thing sitting in one place. So then they end up building a solution that requires data sets from multiple sources. And in order to get there, they need something that's really going to aggregate and then address that data.
That's good. And a little less, well, if I could bring everybody with their cameras back online, Adam, I'll ask you a question before they all get on. Can you just take a guess at, if, you know, in 0 to 10 maturity, where would you say digital twin is now in the marketplace? So we just right at the very beginning, we halfway there, just in terms of the maturity, because we would all say that things like, system integration in general is fairly mature and, energy analytics are fairly mature. Where would you say digital twin is on that maturity scale, just roughly?
It's an interesting question. It's a little bit loaded, and I'll tell you why I say that. Because the reality is that digital twin is in danger of being all things to all people, because really it's what you make of it. So what will frequently happen is if you take that journey with a building owner or an enterprise user, they're going to have generally a very specific starting point, as you just asked in your previous question. So in that case, I would say we're kind of more on the lower end of that scale, almost in the infancy of digital twins. But the reality is the technology is very advanced. So someone who wants to really create advanced analytics and then take advanced action with that, the technology is there to do it. But there's a certain level of change management and sort of business decisions that have to be made to make that a worthwhile process for somebody. You could be a 10 today if you wanted to be, but most people are going to start as a 2.
That sounded like my question was a buy-in question, wasn't it? I'm just going to pop around with a few questions here. We'll kind of jump around. But Marlene, one of the things, phrases I took out of your presentation said increased energy use with new additional fresh air sequences. And if we can just touch again on that, and I don't think I got a chance to talk to you too much about it, the balance between operational efficiency and what you call the additional fresh air sequences. I mean, how are you guys viewing that in terms of wellness and environmental conditions against the darn, energy and OPEX KPIs?
Yes, it's interesting. We're all trying to follow the ASHRAE's 62.1 kind of guidelines on fresh air intake. So with some of the older buildings, we have some legacy systems. We're very challenged on really providing good fresh air or constant fresh air, and really opening all the air handling units provides obviously an increase in energy. Where we have good technology and obviously intelligent data systems, we're able to manipulate and work with CO2 sensors and with occupancy sensors with respect to making some changes so that we can continue to provide good air quality, but also become very efficient from an energy perspective.
Yeah, that's. I think there's not a hard answer to it, but I do appreciate that the title of this session and that we're talking about those things. And Thomas, you said something in there that I wanted to emphasize. It was about the building systems integration is critical. And I think that is, it sounds a little techie, but it really is the heart of almost everything to do with your, not only your experience, but your energy efficiency and net zero. Is that a place you started, or did you discover like, holy crap, it's all about the building control integration?
We didn't start there. We kind of backed into it, I guess at a relatively early point, as we started to understand, this project started back in 2011, and everyone knows the term, many know the term net zero today. Back then, I remember our CEO talking to us about it and kind of secretly Google searching net zero because I had never didn't even know what it was. So when I wrapped my head around what net zero was and what it would take to get there, given some of the challenging characteristics of this site, we're in an urban environment, so we're surrounded by high-rise buildings that limits our ability to generate solar. You know, we didn't have a nice big field next to us that we could put an array in. So we had to get really aggressive on efficiency. And as we started doing that, that we quickly realized that we were going to have to implement a lot of different disparate technologies. And just in order to efficiently operate those different technologies, we needed a single platform. And then also the net zero concept is, it's an accounting exercise. It's how much energy did you make over the course of a year compared to how much energy did you consume? And so visibility into the data from, the power monitoring system, various other systems was really important. One of the key mechanical strategy for this building is the idea of natural ventilation. And so every other window automatically opens up if we have certain outside conditions. And bringing that fresh air in is fantastic from an energy standpoint. I mean, we basically turn the mechanical system, we open the windows and turn the mechanical systems off. The geometry of the building creates this really efficient flow of air. And that is one of the most complicated aspects of the building. Getting the windows open and close on time, you know, based on certain conditions, that probably was the most complicated piece of the systems.
Yeah, no doubt. And Mark, when he said, you know, building systems integration is critical, I was thinking, is there a doctor in the house? You mentioned, playing off of that, you mentioned in your presentation, changing dynamics, you know, to be prepared for changing dynamics and flexibility. You know, is that easier said than done? Or when you think about your control systems, are your control systems? How do I prepare for changing dynamics and flexibility?
I think, you know, from the control systems perspective, it's not that difficult. Obviously, once the base control systems are there, it's just a matter of, you know, doing some programming and things to, you know, to adapt to that particular change. And, you know, one of the areas that we see, and I'm sure everybody else on the call does too, is we have to operate in a flexible space where today we may have a quarter of the people in our office. Tomorrow we may have half, and so forth and so on. So being able to have your sequences based on true real occupancy at any given time, I think is a really good example of what you're asking, Tom.
I think so. Dwight, then I'm going to take it down another click. And, you know, if somebody said, I'm going to have an asset tracking sensor or a people tracking sensor or something, let's say that's Bluetooth. But I might say, but wait, Dwight's already got me into PoE and Wi-Fi. And how do you deal with mixing wired wireless, different types of wirelesses and different types of wired? I mean, how do you prepare for that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So we see PoE as really a backbone, power over Ethernet is a backbone technology, because you can do any bandwidth, any application, any protocol, can be cyber secured, use IT professionals to manage it and maintain it. So it's a perfect backbone, and you don't have to have all, you know, you open up the ceiling right now, it's like a rat's nest of different cables doing different things. So just keep it simple. But then at the end, where you have, you know, for us anyway, our node, we have USB, and now we can connect different transceivers for different, you know, that last mile could be all kinds of different things, you know, sensors, it can be different protocols, different wireless or wired ways to connect things. But it really opens up the realm of possibilities. So for instance, if you want to deploy for real-time access tracking and location services, then you can just quickly put some power over Ethernet cables up, put the nodes in, and connect up USB Bluetooth transceivers. Then the data starts tunneling back. Then you just add a software that's for that service, real-time location service software, that consumes that data and provides that value. So you're leveraging that existing infrastructure. So you can have that infrastructure in place. I mean, imagine we just have nodes every 10 square feet that you're connecting up lights, you're connecting up your access control systems, you're connecting up, you know, and then you just say, okay, I've got USB connections and all those places too. So if I want air quality sensors, I want Bluetooth, whatever it is, you just connect them up. It's inexpensive because you're leveraging all the existing infrastructure. And then
so these end devices with different mediums can funnel back into the backbone, sounds like. Great. Yep. And Adam, you had, I'm nitpicking for you, there was a phrase in yours that said integrated with operations, which, you know, that sounds good on paper. But what have you found in implementing when you do need to take the technology and you've got to now deal with culture and workflow and so-called operations? Is that too big to fail kind of thing? How does it work?
Well, it's a natural progression of the industry, right? So there aren't a whole lot of people that can comfortably just sort of sit in the basement and say, I refuse to change. There are certainly people that will choose to do that, and it's probably not ultimately going to be a position they can hold for very, very long. So the industry, as new buildings come on board, people are always sort of moving to the a more connected building. So the people are coming along for the ride. It actually is a significantly easier conversation today than it was just, you know, 2 years ago. just talking to people about the idea of change management when it comes to specifically looking at data, allowing data and the analytics to actually, God forbid, touch your building, right? Make an automatic adjustment to something without a human in the loop is only now reaching a level of comfort that anyone's willing to say yes. And it's actually pretty remarkable because it makes quick believers.
That's fantastic. And I think you're right about that. It's there is a cultural wall, but I mean, what are we trying to accomplish? And Sarah, I'm going to give a summary here and then let you finish up with some of the details and next steps for the RealCom. But I just want to mention to the audience that sequence of questions we had, just to give you a sense of how great this panel is, Marlene started with describing the balance between operational efficiency and occupant experience. And then we went to Thomas to say, hey, but that's going to be predicated on you having great control of all your building control systems. And then Mark told us when you have that, it's all a matter of sequencing those things together. Dwight talked about how then the various technologies funnel into the backbone. And then Adam was talking about then how that works into the culture and how the technology goes into the culture and the workflow. So I just want to say, panel, that was a really great answers and way to kind of sum up a boot camp level on this topic, and really, really appreciate everybody's presentations and great answers to the questions. Thank you. And Sarah, we'll turn it back to you.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate you moderating today's panel and also moderating actually the entire bootcamp series. For everyone who missed part one and two, we do have recordings available and we are happy to send those out to anyone interested. I also want to thank the panel for joining us today and providing such a great insight to your work, and really appreciate your time and effort in preparing the session. And I also want to thank the audience for joining us today. I do want to invite you to join us for a couple of other events that are coming up. We do have a RealCom Live episode tomorrow, and in that episode, we will be talking to the GSA. And then we also have our next webinar next week, Thursday, same time. And in that session, we will be talking about the hybrid workplace tools. So hopefully you will join us again next week. And with that, I want to wish everyone a wonderful rest of your day. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
Thanks, guys.